Galatians, the fifth chapter. To say that Paul maybe switches gears here a little bit, not off subject. Paul doesn't leave this same discussion that he ended up with in chapter 4. In fact, really, I'm not so sure that if you would take away the divisions of chapters, you would see a much easier flow. So when we read this, we have to come away and really remember what discussion that we've already had that we would have ended up on last week. What did we end up the discussion on last week in Galatians 4? With what subject? Anyone? Okay. The change of the law and freedom in Christ. And that's going to be a critical discussion. That really is. It continues in the last end of chapter 4. He describes two different types of people. What two different types of people were they? The people of the... Anybody? The children are the children of the free woman. The children of the bondservant. There's two different kinds of people we're talking about here. We're talking about free versus enslaved. We're talking about liberty versus bondage. Any word I want to put in there to describe, Paul is trying to get them to really understand the concept that was the Old Testament, the old law, and say there's an element of this law that puts someone in bondage. And let's back up to chapter 4 for a minute. Look at what he says in verse 24. This is allegorically speaking. For these two women are two covenants, one proceeding from Mount Sinai bearing children who are to be slaves. She is Hagar. Now, this Hagar, Mount Sinai in Arabia, and corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. But the Jerusalem above is free. She is our mother. And he goes on to describe these people. And he's making the transition from getting them to understand the principle in the old law to applying it in the new covenant in Christ. And that's where he begins the discussion this morning. Begins the discussion this morning about standing fast in your liberty. Sometimes we're going to use these two words a little interchangeably, so forgive me if I do that. Liberty and freedom. In the harbor of New York stands a very, what is it called? Statue of Liberty. What was the first thing that people saw when they came into this new land, whenever they were coming over from Europe or from other countries? They came into New York Harbor and saw this symbol of liberty. What did it stand for to them? Freedom. What else? Say again. Hope. All right. Hope. What else? Welcoming. That's a good one. Welcoming. Opportunity. A new start. Would you think that those people, after having made those voyages, coming in and looking at that, do you think that they would get to the harbor, see the Statue of Liberty, sign their name on the books when they came in, get on the boat, and turn around and go back to where it is they came from? Would that make any sense at all? Isn't that what the Galatians are doing? They're getting a taste of the liberty. They're getting a taste of freedom. And then they're getting in the boat figuratively and turning back to what was oppression, slavery, unwelcoming, no opportunity. Really, that's what Paul is getting at. Putting it in our language today, that's really what they're doing, isn't it? Let's read just verse 1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery. Don't go back. You've got to the land of opportunity. You are in a dispensation that is welcoming, that is better than what the old one was. Why turn around again? Why go back? The word here, freedom, and if I pronounce this wrong, please forgive me, Eleutheros, freeborn. In a civil sense, one who is not a slave, free, exempt, unrestrained, not bound by obligation. Can you see some of the elements of the old law in that definition? Some things really that stick out in my mind are not bound by an obligation. Paul in several places talks about being bound to the slavery, bound. That word itself brings things into your mind that are not good. Okay? Comments or questions about this? All right. So, yes, sir.
These people were not going to volunteer going back. There was a group of people who were trying to take them back to that old country for their
right. Right. And that makes it in some ways almost worse because they're allowing themselves to be taken back. Could they be taken back by force? No. I mean, that's the concept here that is a little different when we look at a physical example of it. The concept of being drugged back. There's not a one of us here that can be drugged into a way of thinking. We allow people to talk us into something. You know, the old adage, the devil made me do it. No, you allowed the devil to talk you into something, but he didn't make you do it. So it's a very good point. They're being pulled back into something. They're being taken back into something, but there's a voluntary aspect to that. This one right here I thought was interesting. Vine's Greek New Testament Dictionary said that phrase, let's go back to verse 1, it was for freedom that Christ set us free. He said, really, this is a better way to translate this because it gets the meaning and the tenses of the words in the original Greek. It's not to bring us into another form of bondage did Christ liberate us from that which we were born, but in order to make us free. He didn't bring us into another form of bondage. He set us free. We're not going from one bondage into another bondage. That's really the meaning there that he gets to. It's for freedom that Christ set us free, not to put us into something else. It's not to bring us into something that would hinder us or to bind us to something. It's freedom, okay? And it's true freedom. So I ask a question. What did he free us from? What did he free us from? Yes, sir. Okay. And getting back to the point that Mr. Bob made, that's really, I think, where they're pulling them back to. Remember the Jews during Jesus' time, what was one of the reasons they hated Jesus? They even stated it at one point. He's going to do what? He's going to take away our place here. Those people depended, those Jews depended on the needs of the layman, I'm going to use that term, the normal people, they depended on them. They depended on them to be subject to them. They missed the point. The Levites in the old law, what was their purpose? What was their purpose? No trick questions, promise. They were the priests, and the priests were to do what? Mediate. Okay. What else?
Sacrifice.
Offer sacrifices. Anything else?
Teachers of the law.
Get those things and sum it up. What did they do for the people?
They were the
intermediaries. Well, that's a hard one this morning. To serve. Was their position ever intended as a position of power? Think about that for a minute. You know, we might liken it to our politicians today, and I do that, but that I think is a very good comparison. We have a group of people that their purpose is to serve the people that they are representing. Far too many times, I think that's not what they do. The Levites were to serve. That's why they called it service at the temple or the tabernacle. It wasn't a position of authority. They were doing nothing more than repeating what God had given them. They had no authority inherent in that position. Respect, yes. Differentiation, yes. But not authority. Anything that they did came from God. They served the people. When it came time for choir sacrifice, I brought it to them. They served me. They interceded on my behalf. And much the way in John the 13th chapter, what does Jesus say to his, if I'm washing your feet, if I'm serving you, what do you think you ought to be doing to your brethren? The Jews didn't like that. It took away their position. It took away their authority. And Paul here really addresses that. What they're free from then. Let's go on with that. One point here has been made that it's freedom to approach God. No intermediary needed. What else? And I'm going to tell you right now, right off the bat, we're going to be going a lot into Romans in this lesson. Everything from 5 to chapter 14, so be prepared to flip back and forth. We're free from the law. And it's not just any law. It really was a law that bound you to sin and death. Does that mean God made an imperfect law? Nope, that wasn't the purpose of the law. We discussed that a few lessons back. The law had a specific purpose. What did we say the law's purpose was? It was a what? A schoolmaster, a tutor. It was a guide. It guided us to the new covenant. It wasn't intended to stay around. So it freed us from that. What else? It freed us from sins. Okay? That's a big one. Okay? That law generated sin, but really did not generate, by design, a way to forgive those sins. We talked about that a few lessons back. It rolled those sins forward. They were there, but it pushed them. It just kept pushing them until the time where Jesus died on the cross. And at his death, all the sins were taken care of all mankind for all times in one sacrifice. So all these are good. Let's look at what we already we've already talked about in Galatians at one point in time or another. Go back to Galatians 2, verse 16. Works of the law. 2 verse 16. Would somebody like to read that? Go ahead. Somebody also go ahead and turn to Romans 7, 4 through 6, and let's read that too. Get another volunteer. All right. That word in verse 6, bound. We were enslaved. So Paul reiterates in Romans the exact same thing he does there. Works of the law are done away with. Now, I want to put a caution here. Does that mean works are done away with? Does that mean works are done away with? No, it does not. Why? All right. Very clearly, works are required. There are works required for salvation, and I'm going to make that as a very cautious. And that may be a trick question this morning. Are works required for salvation? Okay. Let me ask that another way and see if the answer changes. Works to us. not by themselves. I think that's where people really get that messed up, is the way that the question is asked. It really depends on what answer you give. Works are required for salvation. James tells us faith without works is dead being by itself. But it also says, by faith, in Hebrews 11, by faith, someone in the Old Testament did something else. If you look at every time that chapter on faith is brought out, it always says, by faith, someone did something. I can't prove my faith. I can't show my faith. I cannot declare my faith without obedient works. So the answer lies in the question, how I asked it. Works won't save me, but I can't be saved without them. Okay? But specifically here, we're talking about works of the law. What was required to be saved by the old law? And I'm talking salvation here. Not by itself. There you go. That was certainly a piece of it, but completely keeping it. That's why it was never designed that way, because God understands that His people won't keep it perfectly. But when one came about that did, His Son, that fulfilled the law. That person was a perfect sacrifice. So it really freed us from something that by its design was not for that purpose of salvation. That purpose was to guide us to perfection. Questions or comments on that? Yes, sir. You know, in that last part that you mentioned there, I think that's interesting. I don't know that I've ever caught it, but whenever you said it, for some reason it did. Well, what? Good and faithful servant? Done? Is that not an action word itself? So the obedience is there, but God's part is salvation. Our part is not. Our part is to do what we've been asked to do, what we've been told to do. Don't worry about whether or not you can do enough to save, because you can't. Once you have sinned, once you have transgressed the law, what is the penalty for that? Death. There's nothing we can do about that. But what we can do is do what we're told and let God handle that piece of it. That's God's part, not our part. Any other comments on this? Yes, sir.
I don't want to belabor this point.
That's okay.
But the passage in Galatians 2,
mm-hmm.
when it talks about works of the law,
mm-hmm.
the definite article is not in the original.
That is correct.
And what he's really saying is works of law.
Right.
And the emphasis is not on that the thing that the law prescribed is inferior.
Right. And I think that's an important point for those of you who may not heard it. In that passage in Galatians 2, and depending on what translation, you even omit the definite article, these not in front of law in the original. It's law, period. Whether it's the old law, whether it's the new law, whatever law it is. Law does not save. Law actually condemns. That's the purpose of the law. Okay? What's the old saying? Fences make great neighbors. Okay? Point is the fences is the boundary. Okay? It defines what the boundary is. So it's not that it condemns us in the sense of it doesn't condemn us in the sense that we are condemned by law, but because we transgress the law, it condemns us. It's almost as if we're condemning ourselves is really what the principle is on that. So that's a very good point. So what's another thing? It freed us from sin. Somebody turn to Galatians 3:22, read 22-25, and then someone also turn to Romans 8, and let's read 1 and 2 if I can get a volunteer. Galatians 3:22, anyone? You get Galatians, who's got Romans? All right, you got Romans? Okay, Galatians 3:22-25. Romans 8, 1 through 2. Free from the law of sin and death. Okay? Tutor to bring us there. Sin has been taken away. We are free from that. What does it mean to sin? Maybe that's a little bit obvious, but what does it mean to sin? Transgression of the law, okay? Missing the mark, literally. We've been freed not from sinning, but from our sin. We've been freed from what separates us from God. We have been freed from that element in our lives that is lawlessness. It's going to become very important when we get to our latter point to understand that sin is what separates us from God. Okay? And rather than to give it up to you just yet, please just remember that. Okay? He mentions one other thing. He mentions also from traditions. Somebody read Galatians 4. 9 and 10. And then someone turned to Romans 15, 5 through 9. Who would like to read the passage in Galatians? Okay, Galatians and Romans. Romans, okay. All right. Galatians 4, 9 and 10. And then passage there in Romans 15. Romans 15, 5 through 9.
May the God who gives endurance and encouragement give you the same attitude of mind towards each other that Jesus Christ had, so that with one mind and one voice you may glorify the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. Accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you, in order to bring praise to God. For I tell you that Christ has become a servant of the Jews on behalf of God's truth, so that the promises made to the patriarchs might be confirmed, and moreover, that the Gentiles might glorify God with his mercy, as it is written, therefore I will praise you among the Gentiles, I will sing praises of your name.
Okay. Paul goes into a discussion in one of the previous passages in Galatians about this traditions. What were some of the traditions that they held to that were mentioned specifically? in this passage, in Galatians 4? What were some of them that were mentioned?
Days of waiting.
Okay, specifically talking about the ones there as far as observing feast days and things like this. What the Gentile or what the Jews had begun to do really is to observe those traditions above and beyond the law itself. It was almost as if that they held those traditions out to be something really more important in some ways than the law. In fact, Christ addressed it when he talked about that you observe these things, the lesser things, without observing the weightier things. He said you need to be observing both. He didn't dismiss the feast days because God himself established them. But what he did say is you are not keeping the importance of even the little things or the big things. You begin to get things out of balance. Paul here, whenever he goes through and talks about freedom, is he says, you're free from that. You're free from the traditions of men. You don't have to be bound by those things any longer. He also frees us from that. So just three things that Paul talks about briefly, not only in his passage in Galatians, but also he talks to the brethren at Rome about them too. Questions or comments before we get to this next part? Okay, all right. So sometimes the way I think may be a little bit different than the way some people think, because to me, understanding something, if I have trouble understanding it, or if I want to understand it better, is to understand not what it is, but what it's not. So what is freedom not? I think this is very interesting. Freedom is not empowerment. P.J. O'Rourke, an author, writer, almost a satirist, if you will, gave three things, and two of them I pulled from because I really thought they were important to this passage. Freedom is not empowerment. Can somebody tell me what empowerment is? What is empowerment?
The way it's taken today is to essentially say, I have decision-making power for anything I want. It's a me.
It's very me-centered. It's doing it by my will or strength. Okay? I can do this. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that empowerment is a bad thing, but whenever it comes to spiritual things, I would argue that it is very bad. And here's the reason why I would argue it. Because whenever we begin to think we can do it ourselves, what does that diminish? God himself. The power that God wields through the cross is diminished. What were these people doing? These people were doing exactly that. They were diminishing the power of the cross, in part because they said, I can keep the law and I can be saved by the law. They may not have believed that and they may not have thought that, but their actions said that. In trying to get these people to go back to the law, what they were doing is saying, this law is more important than it is. And in getting that importance too high, they minimize the power of the cross. Empowerment is not good in today's definition for a Christian. That is not freedom. Freedom is not empowerment, but neither is it entitlement. Okay? What is entitlement?
It's a statement saying that you have a right to this thing just by virtue of the fact that you are here.
I have my rights. I'm going to tell you that I think that's one of the worst things in our society. Okay? And you think, man, rights are a good thing. Not whenever they're taken to that extreme. Paul addresses it, doesn't he, in 1 Corinthians when he starts talking about liberties. And in the particular sense, he's talking about our use of liberties in deference to our brother. Okay? And in those passages in 1 Corinthians, the purpose that he's trying to get them to understand is not your right to trod your brother. Just because something is a right doesn't mean that it's the right thing to do. It's strictly because I deserve it. Just by the innate fact that I am here, I have a right to that. Do I have a right to put a stumbling block in front of my brother? That really is the question. That's what this was doing. Excuse me. Paul's going to get into this in just a moment. Who hindered you? What does that word hinder mean? Do you know? Think about that, and we'll talk about it in just a minute. And I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. Paulo Coelho, author of the novel The Zaheer, I thought this was wonderful. Freedom is not the absence of commitments, but the ability to choose and commit yourself to what is best for you. Let that sink in for a minute. Freedom is not the absence of commitments, but the ability to choose and to commit yourself to what is best for you. It's not the absence of commitments. When I am free, does that mean I can do whatever I want to do? Do we kind of get that definition maybe a little bit skewed today? Does freedom mean that when I see my neighbor's new car that I can go take it? I have the freedom to do that, right? I'm free. It's not the absence of commitments. It's the ability to choose. Whenever we start talking about the law and we start talking about the new law, what did the new law give us the ability to choose that the old law did not? Have you thought about that? What did the new law give us the ability to choose that the old law did not? What did the old law not have a choice in? I did not have a choice, and it's one that we just talked about. Yes, sir. In Christ. Thank you for putting that preposition there. That is the choice we have. The old law did not have that. They still bound us down. They weighed us down. We have the abuse Christ and to live in Him that is sinless. Not that we don't sin, but that the grace of God covers those sins and forgives those sins. That's something the old law didn't have. That's the freedom He's talking about. He's not talking about the freedom necessarily from all of the things that the old law did, but the fact that this new law gives us the ability to choose. I had no choice in the old law whatsoever. The only choice I could do was what's happened in the past can keep getting rolled up, but in the end, it's still there. It still bound me down. I have a choice, not just no commitment. Thoughts or comments about that? Or disagreements. I'm okay with those too. That is absolutely correct. We have the ability to choose, but there's always a lot of these things. But what choices we make will define whether or not we're a godly person. So it's not a choice from an open table. It's a choice from a very specific form or a very specific place. Things that we can choose, but we have the ability to choose. Yes, sir.
Drawn to the conversation that confused the state that Nicodemus was in when he was talking to Jesus. He didn't understand the spiritual man, and sometimes we forget about that spiritual being. Now, in the carnal mind, we are slaves to the law. What can I do? What can I not do? There were certain things, there were food laws that they had. They were slaves to the food law. They were slaves. Yes. When you read Leviticus and you understand that there was a lot of things that they couldn't do, not just the Ten Commandments themselves, but they had a law of governing them in everyday activities, and they had to do those things, so they were slaves to that. Jesus is coming to them and telling them, now you are to serve God in your heart, in your mind, in your soul. That frees you from this old law. Mm-hmm. They couldn't quite grasp So they were confused to the point that Jesus seemed as though he was an enemy, as if he was destroying the law. And that was not what he was doing. He was bringing the spiritual man out of them, because he's telling them that spiritual being yep. lies dormant within your soul, and this law is keeping it bound. Thou shalt not commit. But now in your heart, you, as long as you don't kill someone, you can hate. I can hate you as long mm-hmm. as I don't kill you, and I haven't broken the law. Yep. Now you're free from it. If I hate you in my heart, yep. then now I'm still in rebellion with God.
And Jesus really put the parentheses around this idea of choice, this idea of looking into that inner man, what's in your heart. He puts parentheses around it, and he gives us the boundaries of those choices we're to make. Whenever the rich young man came to Jesus, what was it that he told him? He said, "Have you kept the commandments?" He said, "I've kept those." What was the problem with the young man? He said, "Go and sell all you have and give to the poor." He went away sad. Why? Because he didn't want to make the choice of what was in the heart. He didn't want to make the choice of saying, "I've got to give up these things for this," because that was the spirit or the intent of the law, was to do what? Was to help your neighbor. Okay? Look at it another way. What were the greatest commandments? Are those any different today? Aren't those repeated, and aren't those reiterated, re-emphasized in the law? The point was, those things are there. There's a boundary to those. Do things, the things that you do those things because of your love and care for your fellow man. That's going to put boundaries on it. If you love your neighbor as yourself, you're not going to steal that car, right? Because it's not yours. You don't have to have a law that says thou shalt not steal to understand that that is wrong. Okay, that law brought us, tutored us, trained us in the way that we should think. Not necessarily the what we should think, but the way that we should think. We should be thinking for others and thinking for ourselves. Yes, sir. There is.
Mm-hmm. Or a liberty to not obey. Mm-hmm. The difference is, under the new covenant, when we obey God, sins are totally forgiven, and we're not under the continuum of sin of law.
I think that's exactly it. I mean, don't take it wrong. The choices were there. The point is that the results of the choices are really what we're talking about here, and that's exactly right. The results of our choices in the old law didn't do a whole lot for us. The results of our choices in this new law does a lot for us. It frees us when we were bound. So, yep. We're going to begin or continue on Wednesday night, and we're going to actually get into the passage. So, good discussion this morning. Thank you.